The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka's Fakata, Jag like Michael Walker, Polanco and Franco. Happy Kokomo Friday. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball today. Frank Stample joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. Now, what's up, Chris? You good?
Yeah.
Excited?
Yeah.
It sounded like you just liked to hear you say his name.
Yeah. It's just, you know, how sometimes you're like in The Mandalorian when he learned Grogu's name and he just kept saying it and Grogu would just look up at him every time he said it. It was kind of like that. You know, I just like the way you say my name.
Well, I appreciate that, Chris, and I have no idea what you're talking about because I have not watched The Mandalorian. Surprise.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert. Baby Yoda's name is not Baby Yoda.
Wow. Do I even need to watch it now? It's like between that, Seinfeld, people are coming at me. They did not like the Seinfeld take, Scott. So
also, Darth Vader take is Luke Skywalker's father.
Oh, well, I mean, come on.
Sorry.
Just Chris, ruined everything.
And he was Anakin Skywalker. You had to learn sometime, Frank. We can't shelter you from the world. Get out of here.
That was probably, that wasn't my first Azer take, but that was definitely an Azer take. So I deserve that. I got to go back and watch Seinfeld. I don't know. I got to give it another shot. I'll try again.
Well, whatever. It's not a show that you should probably watch from the first episode because it's a show where the first episode is probably the worst episode.
Yeah, Elaine's not in it.
Right.
Pilot. It's a very different show.
Yeah. I would go to the IMDb page for Seinfeld and see the highest rated episodes and just go down the list that way. That's probably the best way to enjoy a non-serialized show like that.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I could do that for 5 to 10 just to get myself ingrained into it. But then I would like to watch it in chronological order, even though it probably doesn't matter. But I don't know. I just have a weird thing with organization. We are now inside 2 weeks of opening day, and the weirdest part is that I am already all drafted out, and I haven't even had my main drafts yet, which is the weirdest part. Has that happened to either of you?
I'm
burnt out. It's March 18th, 19th. I'm burnt out.
I'm looking forward to Scott giving me back my weekday nights. You know, he's taking all my time up.
With mock drafts?
Yeah, with mock drafts.
There are still going to be these podcasts we have to do. You know?
Yeah, but I have to do the podcast now anyway.
Okay.
But now, like, I stopped working at, like, 6:30, and I got to do a podcast at 8. I'm staring at my phone all afternoon. It's bad for my eyes, Scott. You're ruining my eyesight.
There are times where I step away from the computer after just hours, and I feel like my vision is blurry. I don't know. I think I'm losing it. I don't know what's going on. It's a big weekend, though. I've got the NFBC main event. I've got Tout Wars head-to-head salary cap draft on Sunday as well. So very busy time. I've got to get myself into the draft spirit somehow. You know what's not going to do it? This unfortunate news about Carlos Carrasco. So let's start there. The biggest news maybe of the spring so far. I'm probably forgetting something, but definitely the biggest news from the past couple of days. Carlos Carrasco has a hamstring tear and will be sidelined a minimum of 6 to 8 weeks. And this is even more unfortunate because he was the player I loved. And I really did like the value that you were getting him at before all of this started up, the elbow inflammation, now the hamstring tear. And I mean, it's a nice story because he was coming back from, obviously, leukemia last year, and he pitched really well. So that brings us to about early to mid-May as the timeline for Carrasco. And then he still has to ramp back up. So there is a chance that we will not see Carlos Carrasco pitch for the Mets until sometime in June at the earliest. So it's a really tough call right now. I dropped Carrasco down to SP 49 in Roto and SP 54 in head-to-head points, just behind names like Corey Kluber, Marcus Stroman, who I'll talk about a little bit later on as well, and Jameson Taillon. Scott, your first reaction to this Carrasco news and how far I dropped him in the ranks?
Well, it surprised me how far you dropped him down, and then I looked into it a little more, and you know, they were classifying it as a tear as opposed to a strain, and you know, every strain is a tear.
Yeah, that's
every strain is a tear, but when they call it a tear, yeah, that usually signals it's a worse
strain. Usually means it's a grade two strain. Grade one, if they just call it a strain and they don't specify, it's usually grade one, which is, you know, the most minor version. Grade two, at least, you know, does, I think it's like some actual grade, like grade one is like a stretch. I think grade two is where you actually have like a disconnect.
Yeah. 6 to 8 weeks is not an official timetable. I kind of feel like that's just the timetable everybody goes to when they don't have a timetable. It's like the all-purpose timetable. I have a rule for driving. It takes 15 minutes to get everywhere. And that's surprisingly true a lot of the time. But anyway, I digress. I'm heavily invested in Carlos Carrasco. I have him in TGFBI. I have him in the Memorial Magazine League, which we, you know, the salary cap draft we did the other day. I thought I had him in Tout Wars too. Thankfully, I do not. But it's disappointing because he's somebody I expected to draft a lot, and maybe I still will. I mean, if he's dropping outside the top 50, I see him more in the 45 range. I still think I'd take him over Framber Valdez. We don't really know what the timetable looks like for Valdez either. I imagine he'll be back sooner than Carrasco, but that's a vaguer one. And plus Carrasco's better. This is why I try to over-invest in pitching, try to get more than I actually need, because this will not be the last injury to a high-profile pitcher, and it won't be the worst injury to a high-profile pitcher. There will be more. This is the first. Thankfully, it doesn't look like a season ender, but there will be more.
Chris, your initial reaction here to Carlos Carrasco and how far I dropped him in the ranks. I mean, you know, definitively behind, I think for sure, Frankie Montas, Aaron Civale, that entire group, Mike Soroka. I dropped him behind Soroka because Soroka's going to be back sooner. We're probably going to see him at some time in April. Not that he'll be as good as Carrasco, but if we get a whole another month or two out of Soroka, I think that makes sense as well. So what do you think about dropping him this far and your reaction to Carrasco?
It stinks. I hate to see any injury, but especially one, you know, suffered during a, you know, he was like what, running the bases in like a drill or something. That stinks. You hate to see that. My initial thought is, looking at it, I think I want to move him to 49th, and not just because I want to be slightly more pessimistic than Frank.
You're one-upping him.
I'm trying to be one more pessimistic than him. No, it's that I'm looking at my rankings and I've got maybe 46, actually, because I've got Shohei Ohtani at 45. And if Carrasco comes back in, let's say, mid-May, I would think he'll probably get a similar number of innings for the whole season as Shohei Ohtani. And I think they'll probably be fairly similar. You know, I think Carrasco's more of a sure thing, but Shohei Ohtani's currently healthy. So I think you can kind of balance those out. And I think, you know, that might make sense. The other one I was thinking was like Tristan McKenzie's 51 for me. And I know I'm higher on him than just about anyone. And that's a similar one where I think Tristan McKenzie will probably throw a similar number of innings for Cleveland. And, you know, I think he's really good. But I think 46 makes a little more sense. So just behind Shohei Ohtani, just ahead of Marco Gonzalez. Here's a question, though. What's the case? I assume you guys have Luis Severino, Noah Syndergaard, and Chris Sale in like the 70 plus range at SP. Mm-hmm. At this point, what's the case for Carrasco over Severino? It's like Severino's a healthy Severino is better.
Yeah, I think
we don't know that Severino's going to be healthy even when he returns. I mean, he had stuff even before Tommy John. And
right. He's currently healthier.
I think Syndergaard's going to be the first one back of all the Tommy John recoveries.
Severino's the first one to throw breaking balls, I believe, off a mound. I think that was today he did that for the first time. I don't think Syndergaard's done that. Syndergaard, I think he was throwing off a mound today, and the reports was like he hit 96, so he's still clearly working his way back. It sounds like Sale is, well behind them at this point.
Here you go.
It might speak to them being undervalued, but I don't know. It's hard to have we're still months out from any of them returning, so it's hard in the recovery from Tommy John surgery to have a clear timeline for that.
Yeah.
And the severity of the injury. I mean, we don't know that they'll be exactly right. They'll be exactly themselves when they come back, when I would bet Carrasco is. I mean, anytime you're talking about a muscle strain with like Carrasco, no matter what part of the body is, there's always the risk of them trying to push it too hard too soon and aggravating it. But as long as that doesn't happen, Carrasco should be fine once he's recovered. And like the person you drafted. And you bring up a good point there with that comparison between Carrasco and Tristan McKenzie. You know, let's assume Carrasco misses the first 2 months of the season, comes back at start of June. You know, the inning total will probably be comparable, but you'd always rather have the innings over a smaller sample of starts, because those starts are going to be more impactful than
the
five inning outings that McKenzie's going to give you.
Yeah, we don't know. Like, I'm assuming Tristan McKenzie not going to be in the rotation for a couple of months. I think it's somewhat similar. But I will point out, I looked up, just did a quick Google search, MLB grade 2 hamstring pull. There's quite a number of results that came up. But one that was interesting was CC Sabathia in 2017. He was a little bit older than Carlos Carrasco. But he had a grade 2 hamstring strain, and he missed about 21 days, about 3 weeks, it looks like. He was out from June 13th to July 4th. That doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it's...
If it was a mid-season injury, he was already built up. And
And there's like, I think George Springer missed longer with his hamstring injury in 2019. I know in NFL, Austin Eckler missed like 8 to 10 weeks with a grade 2 hamstring strain. So even within grade 2, there is room for nuance, and none of us are doctors anyway.
So. By the way, on the podcast today, outside of Carrasco, we're going to be talking about rankings movers, players that are rising up our ranks, and players that we are also dropping. So very relevant conversation here with Carrasco to figure out where we are going to be ranking him for this season, because this weekend in particular, I assume there will be a lot of drafts going on. I put up a poll earlier asking whether you would rather have Carlos Carrasco or Framber Valdez. And Scott, you already answered this question. You said you would still rather have Carrasco. What do you think the results of that poll were?
Well, I participated in it, so I have a pretty good idea. It was close, but Carrasco was ahead when I saw it.
What do you think, Chris?
I think it was close, but Carrasco was ahead.
So we're 346 votes in, and Framber Valdez is leading the poll. 50%. Okay. 50.6%. So just barely, but it tells you, I mean, knowing what we know now, which is not really much about Framber Valdez outside of the fact that he is not going to have surgery, it's 350 people on Twitter, so it doesn't matter that much. But it's interesting to see how people are feeling about the news as soon as it happens. So,
there's always an initial reaction that's much stronger than, I think what might end up being the case, at least.
Alrighty, before we move on, FBT listeners, we want you to compete with us in our bracket challenge game. And I will just point out, by the time you are hearing this, which will be Friday morning, you better get that bracket in soon, because the games start early on Friday afternoon. If you are watching us, then you're going to want to jump into that bracket challenge right now. Scott, Chris, and myself, we will all be in there, and we want you to join us as well. CBSSports.com/FBT brackets. And the winner not only gets a $100 gift card to Paramount Plus, but an entry into our For the People Listener League 16 team head-to-head categories draft. And who enters just one pool? You can also create a group to compete against friends and fill out your bracket for the chance to win a Nissan Rogue and a trip to the 2022 Final Four. You can play on the CBS Sports app or at cbssports.com/FBTBrackets. If you are drafting this weekend, the one player you must have is blank. Chris, fill in the blank. I might be able to fill it in for you. Byron Buxton?
It's not Byron Buxton because he, you know, I didn't draft. Well, I did draft him in today's draft. He is one of my most, he's probably my most drafted player now because I didn't draft Ian Anderson. But I would say Ian Anderson comes closer to being a must draft for me. It actually might be Max Scherzer.
That's threading a needle there.
It is. but I just, I'm only concerned about injury with him. Like, given the fact that his velocity was fine last year, his peripherals were mostly fine. There was a little bit of increase in walk rate, which was uncharacteristic. And the fact that he's been amazing in spring, uncharacteristically as well. It just makes me think, as long as he's on the mound, he's going to be one of the four best pitchers in baseball. And you can get him for cheaper than that. And he's fully capable, so as we know, throwing 200 innings.
So when you say must draft, let's say you're picking 11th or 12th. Do you take him at
that
the
makes it hard. Too? Yeah, that's always the thing with like an early round draft pick. It's a lot easier to say, yeah, I must draft Byron Buxton because I can just take him from any spot.
Like, yeah. My mind immediately went to like late rounders because I actually have more control over that. And I may surprise you with this answer because someone we've hardly talked about.
Ooh, juicy. Let's go.
I think the player I will be most disappointed if I don't draft is Ty France of the Seattle Mariners, who is
I've grown more interested in him as time has gone on.
Yeah, yeah. He's having a bonkers spring. He's the guy, by the way, who hit .399 at AAA 2 years ago with an OPS approaching 1300, which, you know, it was the PCL, it was a juiced ball, but regardless, nobody else in the PCL with the juiced ball was doing that. I don't think Ty France is a 400 hitter in the majors, but I do think he's a good hitter. Last year, he hit over 300. I think he has power, potentially 30 homer power. Safer to say 20, but potentially 30 homer power. He's going to play every day, primarily at DH, but they're also going to give him time at second, where he's already eligible, first and third. So he's going to be a multi-eligible player, I think, a third of the way through the season. He'll have that. Late-round batting average help, like I said, and I think a higher ceiling than his ADP is giving him credit for. So, you know, in those shallower leagues, like a head-to-head points league, that's somebody I could see myself taking with my very last pick. And in deeper rotisserie leagues, you know, my second or third to last pick. And I expect to be heavily invested in him going into the season.
You know, in looking at my most drafted players column that came out on CBSSports.com yesterday, I think I'll go a little later than Zach or Max Scherzer, and that's Zach Greinke, who... I'm drafting, he's been on four of my 13 teams so far, and I'm drafting him 70th overall on average compared to a 107 ADP. So that's probably the actual answer. Is if there's one guy I'm going to reach on, it's probably Zach Greinke.
The oldies, I appreciate it because we talked about prospects on yesterday's podcast, and let's show some love to the veterans as well that might be able to get it done this season also. Chris, I've noticed that some of the rotations you've been drafting are, you'll have Scherzer and Greinke, but then you'll pair them up with some young guys like a Sixto Sanchez or Sandy Alcantara. Are you consciously doing that to get some young upside with the older guys?
Yeah, it's not Sixto Sanchez, it's Ian Anderson. I think my ideal rotation front four is Scherzer, Greinke, Ian Anderson and Sandy Alcantara, because that's three guys I think could throw 200 innings. Three guys who I think could be truly elite on a per inning basis. And then Alcantara, I just think he's rock solid.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about Alcantara in a little bit because he is moving up, I think, all of our rankings. Scott for sure sent that over. So we will talk about Alcantara in a little bit. Marcus Stroman. haven't talked about him much. I think he's kind of overlooked all throughout the draft season. I've thought to myself, you know, he's just undervalued. I think he's undervalued. He might not be flashy, but I'm growing more interested in Stroman because he has this new split changeup that he's talking about. He's getting more whiffs, more strikeouts in spring. Not that I want to be influenced too much. I moved him up slightly to SP48, so he is inside my top 50 starting pitchers now. But someone who routinely in the past has gone deep into his starts, he's going to have a pretty good offense, solid run support with the New York Mets as well. Tougher division, but I think wins are going to be a good possibility for him. And I am growing excited about Marcus Stroman on Thursday against the Nationals. 5 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned, 0 walks, 6 strikeouts. He has more strikeouts than innings pitched in the spring. So
here's the problem I have with Stroman. Mm-hmm. His whip the past four seasons, 131, 148, 131, 129. Now, maybe he becomes not so ground ball reliant with that new pitch, becomes more of a strikeout pitcher, and the whole profile changes. Like, it's possible. I'd bet against it as long as his track record is. And like those kind of whips with the pitching staff I plan to have, like that's going to be a guy who just pulls that stat down for me. So, you know, if you're not as invested in pitching, I think Stroman makes sense. But if you try to invest a lot in pitching like I do, I just like that's a guy I just have no interest in.
No, that's a fair point on the whip. And similar to Dallas Keuchel, we talk about as another innings eater type. He's had very high whips in his the past 4 or 5 seasons for him as well. The 3 of the past 4 years for Stroman, 184 or more innings pitched. So in a year where we are looking for some volume, he sat out last year. Some might look at that as a flaw. Oh, well, how many innings is he going to throw this year? I mean, he's a veteran. He's done it before. I think the year off might actually help him. He might be fresher. Yeah. So
I like him more in points leagues. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the more relevant thing is have you done it before than what did you do last season in terms of innings.
Let's move over to some of those rankings movers, players that are rising up the ranks. And we'll start with some of these for you, Scott. And Austin Meadows, I mean, I don't want to say I told you so, but kind of told you so. He has been pretty good so far in the spring. He has 5 hits, 5 for 20, so it's not, he hasn't been amazing. 4 of those hits have gone for home runs, so I think that we are a little bit more excited because of that. He also had a steal the other day, a home run and a steal in the same game. Do you remember what we called that last year, Scott?
Something dumb. Was it a sweet and savory?
A sweet and savory. Chris, I don't know if you were around for that. What do you think? A home run and a steal in the same game, a sweet and savory.
Okay. That makes sense. Sure.
All right. I'll take any support I could get because not a lot of people liked it.
Yeah, Meadows has an 083 BABIP in spring, so you know, feel a little better about those about that low batting average, Frank. Got 1 hit on 12 balls in play.
It doesn't matter.
I did the math wrong.
It doesn't matter what your BABIP is when everything goes over the fence, Chris.
1250. No, 125. I'm saying that's a good thing. That bolsters your case.
That's right.
Yeah. When that BABIP normalizes, he's going to be hitting like 400.
Scott, tell us how high you're moving Austin Meadows up your outfield ranks. The one that I'm wrestling with right now is him versus his teammate, Randy Arozarena. And that's where I kind of draw the line. Where are you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a raised cluster there because Brandon Lau, mostly because of his second base eligibility, is in that same range. I'm trying to find where I have Meadows now. Okay, so I've moved Meadows up above them. I actually have him as high as 16th. I guess I already made the move to move him up because I can't move him up any more than that. He's 16th in my outfield rankings. But in between Nick Castellanos, who is right behind Luis Robert. Oh, this is head-to-head. Hang on. Let me check Roto. Okay, 18th for Austin Meadows, but still behind Nick Castellanos, right behind him, ahead of Arozarena, ahead of Brandon Lau, Charlie Blackman, Michael Conforto. I drafted him today in the head-to-head categories, mock we did. I drafted him with the first pick of round 8. I chose him over Trent Grisham because I already had a lot of stolen bases, and I chose him over a 4th starting pitcher, which I may regret, but that's what I chose to do in that draft because it seemed like good value round 8 in a categories league.
Speaking of Trent,
he looks good.
speaking of Trent Grisham, I have dropped him a little bit to outfield 20, just dealing with this hamstring injury. It seems like he should be good to go for opening day, but just a little tentative based on this hamstring. I guess there's still a chance he could start the year on the IL.
You know what's interesting is we talk about how second base is weak all the time, so I got to elevate all these second basemen in my rankings. I just hyped Ty France, who I think is going to be multi-eligible, but currently only second base. I love Brendan Rodgers. I've talked about him a few times. I love him as a breakout candidate. Jonathan India, I think, is an interesting sleeper who's going to pick up second base for the Reds if they stick with this Suarez to shortstop plan. I like Jorge Polanco as a sleeper who's going to pick up second base. I think he's a strong bounce back candidate for the Twins. Like I like so many late round second basemen that if I plan on drafting two or three of them, like I don't know that I need to invest in second base at all. I'm kind of frustrating with how many second basemen I'm ending up with every draft.
And like did you mention Tommy La Stella?
I didn't. I'm not really on board with that. But
well, I think he's going to bat leadoff. In spring, he's batting leadoff against lefties and righties pretty much every game that he's in. So I think it is every game that he's in.
That'd be great if he plays every day. I'm still skeptical. And then also left-handed hitter at San Francisco. I mean, maybe those archways are covered again. Yeah. The power's fine, but it was already a slim margin he was working with the power.
Yeah, I'm not expecting him to be a 25 homer guy, but I think if he hits 16 homers and bats close to 300, like I'm okay with that. If he's batting leadoff, Nick Solak, someone we liked a lot last year, Gavin Lux, who I think is still being overlooked. I don't know. Second base is weak, but like it's also got a pretty solid top 11. I've got 11 second basemen in my top 100.
Also, Bobby Witt, didn't mention him. He might be the most hyped of all the, again, doesn't have second right away, but if he makes the team, it'll be as the starting second baseman.
Brendan Rodgers, Andrés Giménez is second base eligible.
Yeah.
And I may be alone on this one, but if I ended up with Colton Wong as my starting second baseman in a roto league, I think I'm okay with that. He's going to bat high in that order. He's, can hit 265 and steal 15 to 20 bases in the right scenario. So,
yep.
Second base is, it's the worst non-catcher position, but assuming. I mean, we don't know about the batted ball or the de-juiced ball, and home runs are happening at a higher rate than ever so far this spring. So I'm skeptical that they're using it, or if they are using it, it's going to be even weirder than we expected. So, I think that's kind of the big thing. Second base would be the position most impacted by a de-juiced ball.
You mentioned a few names.
That's more for the elite guys.
You mentioned a few names there, Chris, that I've also moved up the ranks. Andrés Giménez at second base, I moved up to 15th, and he's better for roto, but could give you 10 to 15 home runs, 20 plus steals, and it's not just that he's having a great spring, which he is. We got confirmation that he will be the starting shortstop for the Cleveland Indians, so he'll have that. I think it's second shortstop and third base eligibility. At some point. So that's very valuable.
I think he already has that on CBS.
And Colton Wong, I moved up to my 17th ranked second baseman just ahead of Jake Cronenworth, Chris Taylor, Gavin Lux. I'm with you. If he remains in the leadoff spot for the Brewers and he hits, he could score 90 plus runs. That is a very undervalued asset. Someone who's rising for you, Chris, is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Is this all spring training base? Because he has been awesome as well. He is 9-for-17 in the spring with 5 walks to 2 strikeouts. You like that plate discipline? And I believe it was of the 12 batted balls that have been tracked by StatCast, he has a 19 degree launch angle, which would be by far the highest of his career.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up that up now, but for me, it's mostly like, oh, he's lost weight. Cool. Great. That's good for him. He, his clothes probably fit better. His profile looks better. I'm trying to be there right with you, Vladito, but I don't really care until I see some results from it. And we're seeing in the spring, he's hitting the crap out of the ball, which we know he can hit the ball hard. He hits the ball. He's kind of just shy of Giancarlo Stanton in terms of elite max exit velo. And now he does appear to be hitting the ball in the air more. And that's the key. Like if he doesn't have to be Joey Gallo, but if he just consistently hits more line drives and ground balls than, or line drives and fly balls than ground balls, the talent is otherworldly. And so now that we're starting to see some evidence of it, I don't think I've drafted him yet, and I need to.
Yeah,
at some point.
This is one of those FOMO situations. That's how I felt right towards the end of draft season last year about Luis Robert, and he's crushing balls in summer camp. And Vlad, it could happen. We know he's a big upside guy. It hasn't happened yet. One of these years, it's probably going to happen. Best shape of his life. And yeah, you really did. You moved him up to your sixth ranked first baseman, just ahead of Luke Voit, Matt Olson, and Paul Goldschmidt. He is eighth for Scott at first base. He is seventh for me. Let's jump back over here. Sandy Alcantara, we spoke about him yesterday, Scott, and how awesome he looked against, I believe it was the Mets. 9 strikeouts over 5 innings, 14 whiffs on 64 pitches. He did enough to be named the opening day starter for the Miami Marlins. I have moved him up to SP37, so he's a riser for me, just ahead of Dylan Bundy. How far are you moving Alcantara up the ranks?
Let's see. So I actually have Bundy 29th. So I have Bundy much higher. I'm thinking 36, moving him ahead of Corbin, who I need to move down, Patrick Corbin. Moving Alcantara ahead of his teammate, Sixto Sanchez. Moving him ahead of Sonny Gray, who is going to be an entry into my bus 3.0 column coming out tomorrow. Vladimir Guerrero, by the way, being removed from my bus. 36, that puts him just behind Charlie Morton and Lance McCullers. I like McCullers a lot. He's a breakout for me this year, as Alcantara now is too. So it'd be a close call between those two, but I think I'm going to stick with McCullers ahead of Alcantara. Slot him in there at 36.
That's exactly where I was too, Scott. I like McCullers a good amount. Sandy Alcantara is young enough where he can still progress to a point that we haven't seen yet before. So I don't want to discount that possibility, but yeah, I drew the line there with McCullers. Chris, who would you rather have between Sandy Alcantara and McCullers?
Yeah, I have McCullers where you guys have him. He's 36 for me. So right in that same range, but I've got Alcantara 32. And
Homer,
I think anyone who knows me and how I feel and talk about the Marlins should be pretty I never liked Alcantara. I thought that was an awful return for Marcelo Ozuna. I admit I kind of look like an idiot for that one because he looks really good. And
Zach Allen came back too. Oh, wait.
Ooh. Hey, they got Jess Chisholm. You know, Sandy Alcantara and Jess Chisholm is pretty cool. Alcantara has a 3.72 ERA in 2019 and 2020. Now, he has a 440 FIP, so you can just kind of write that off if you want, but he's consistently outperformed his FIP in the major leagues. He is really hard to square up. And last season, the walk rate and strikeout rate improved. And it was only 7 games, small sample size caveats all around, but the swing strike rate on his changeup and slider both improved. He's throwing more four-seam fastballs this spring with the intention of getting more swinging strikes. There's never any question about the quality of the stuff.
Yeah.
Actually, that 9 strikeout game he had, was it yesterday? Most of the whiffs, I think, he had 7 whiffs on his sinker. And he was kind of doing a little bit of, I think that's what I saw, and he was doing a little bit of the Andrew Heaney.
I thought the curveball was the one getting all the whiffs.
I thought he had a ton of whiffs on the...
Is there somewhere you can look that up? Because I don't.
Yeah, I'll look for it. Baseball Savant.
I'll pull it up for you if you keep talking. Chris.
I keep trying to find that number on Baseball Savant. I can't find it.
They redesigned their stuff. You got to go to player breakdowns. He had.
Why do they keep changing it?
I like it. They're adding more stuff. Let them be. Yeah, he had five whiffs on 18 sinkers. Yesterday he had 2 on the four seamer, 5 on the changeup, 3 on the curveball.
Yeah,
1 on the slider.
Fantastic. I was underselling.
That kind of goes against the narrative of him you know, he's talked about how he needs to throw his four seamer more. His four seamer had the same swinging strike rate as Max Scherzer's last year. Basically, it's a really good swing and miss pitch for a four seamer. So I was largely crediting that for what we're seeing this spring. I don't know. I need to.
Yeah,
I
this
need
is
to,
just
need
one
to
start.
Show me how to look into that data. So I can
it's just one it. Start. He does have 19 strikeouts and 12 and two thirds innings so far this spring. Yeah. Eight walks. That's not great, but I think five of them came in one outing. So it's, you know, that kind of thing can skew your numbers. I just think he's really solid. I think he's probably in the top 10 or 15 most likely pitchers to throw 200 innings this season.
Yeah. Well, that's an advantage he has over McCullers for sure.
Yes.
That's kind of why I'm hesitating on it, because all but one of his starts, it was an injury shortened season. All but one of his starts were six plus last year. Alcantara's, and I think he had 11 starts of 7 plus in 2019.
Yeah, 2019 down the stretch especially, he was racking up huge inning totals. His last 10 starts, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them, 7 of his last 10 starts were 7 plus innings, and all but one were at least 6, and that one was a 5 and 2 thirds innings game. Partially, I think he had a really low BABIP in that stretch, but the control was better in that time. And I think, you know, Frank, you and I mentioned it in a podcast last week. The comp is peak Carlos Martinez, never an elite strikeout rate guy. But if he can keep that walk rate to like 3.2 per nine, I think he's going to be really solid.
Well, that's the next step of his progression, Chris. If he gets his walks below 3 per nine, then we could really see a breakout season, because he's going deep into his starts, even walking guys as much as he does.
Yeah.
If he cuts those walks down just a little bit, then he's going to be more efficient. He's going to go deeper into starts, and that could even lead to more strikeouts as well for him. So again, that was Sandy Alcantara. We've been talking about him a lot recently, but I think for good reason. He's looked really good in the spring and should give you a lot of volume this season as well. We are going to hit a quick break, but I want to remind everyone that the deadline to get your podcast listener league submissions in is next week on Tuesday. So we already have a ton of great Photoshops, cropped images of myself, Scott, Chris, Adam as well. Continue to send those in. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. That's the letter I, cbsi.com. Continue to send those in. Make sure that you are available for the draft. The days for the draft will be Sunday, March 28th. At 6 p.m. Eastern time for our head-to-head categories for the People League, and the head-to-head points podcast league draft will be the very next night on Monday, March 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So make sure that you are available for the draft before sending in a submission. The last thing we want is, you know, you winning and then you find out you can't draft, because that would mess everything up, and we don't want that to happen. So get those in by next week, and I will announce the winners on next Thursday's podcast. If you're watching on the video side, don't go anywhere. If you are listening, we're going to take a quick break. But when we return, we have more risers and fallers, some news and notes, and players who get boosted up in OBP leagues. Many people have been asking this question. I've got that coming up for you next on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Let's quickly hit on a few more of these risers and fallers. The last one we talked about was Sandy Alcantara. Chris, I know that you've been on Ketel Marte all spring, even before spring. You were all over that. But he's looked even better. So how much more can you actually justify moving him up the ranks?
There's no limit.
Okay, so he'll be a first round pick soon?
Yeah, I think that's clearly the case. He's 45 for me in roto leagues.
Ooh, he's basically back where he was last year for you.
Yeah, and that just kind of highlights my confidence level in him. I've talked about him a lot. If he finished as the number one second baseman this season, it wouldn't shock me even a little bit. I think him and DJ LeMay, who actually have very similar skill sets, I think I'd probably take Marte to get more home runs and stolen bases. So it mostly comes down to, the runs and RBI, I think, will be in LeMahieu's favor because of that lineup. But I think it's going to be really close. And, that's why I'm perfectly happy to pass on LeMahieu and Albies in particular. I'll take Whit Merrifield for the stolen bases. But, I'm really happy to get Ketel Marte as my second
baseman. Maybe you said on a previous show, but why are you so confident the power is coming back? Because two home runs and 181 at bats last year, yep. An X slug of 375.
Yep. He was dealing with a wrist injury last season. He had the fifth highest max exit velo in the entire league last season, which is frankly stunning.
It is. It's, StatCast didn't seem to care when setting his X slug.
Yeah.
And two home runs.
Yeah. His hard hit rate was lower. His average exit velocity was lower, but he still hit a bunch of balls in that 110, 115 mile per hour range. And so far in the spring, I haven't looked at it in a few days, but earlier this week, he was leading all players who were tracked, which is only 10 of the 30 parks. But he had the most batted balls over 110 miles an hour. And I think he had one that was like 116, which is elite for anyone not named Vlad or Giancarlo. Plate discipline's excellent. He's going to hit for a high average. And I believe in the power. I think he's a legitimate power hitter. And last season was just weird. You can have he only played like 40 games or something. You can have a 40 game stretch where you only hit two home runs and still be a good power hitter.
Yeah. And I really do think that the wrist hampered his season. So I'm buying in more on Ketel Marte. Current ADP on Fantasy Pros is 77.2. He's not in the fourth round of my rankings like he is for Chris, but I would be willing to pull him up one round higher than his ADP right now to ensure that I get him. Because again, second base, we have some sleepers, but you want a potential impact bat. I think Ketel Marte could be one of those. Scott, let's talk about a few of these lower end players that you've been moving up the ranks. And let's focus on two Rockies here, Brendan Rodgers and CJ Krohn. Krohn is having a monster spring. He's 10 for 31, two home runs. First base competition there with the Rockies. Seems like he is close to locking that up. So talk to me about these Rockies, Krohn and Rodgers.
Yeah, CJ Krohn, you could have argued that was a position battle at the start of the spring. And it's just clear that he's the guy at first base for the Rockies. And, currently I have him behind guys like Jamer Candelario, Brandon Belt, Renato Nunez. And so I never have a chance at him in drafts. And that's silly because, CJ Krohn, he's been a power hitter for most of his major league career. He's had a surprisingly good contact rate, too. And that's going to Coors Field. I think sometimes it doesn't. There's kind of a misconception that it's all about adding power. But the biggest thing Coors Field does is add batting average because the outfield is so big. Everybody's BABIP gets boosted, like, I don't know exactly how much, 30 to 50 points. It gets boosted a lot. So, it's not outside the realm of possibility. Crone is a 300 hitter this year with power in that park. Rogers, obviously, he has the Coors Field thing going for him as well, but he was a stud prospect until the injury troubles of the past 2 years. And he's dealing with a bit of a hamstring thing now. It doesn't sound like it's going to keep him out for the start of the season. He was hitting really well the spring before that. He said he wanted to steal 20 bases this year in addition to everything he does with the bat. So he seems like the epitome of a post-type sleeper to me, because like his ADP's around 400 or something. Nobody seems to want him, and they should.
Scott, how far are you moving CJ Crone up? Because I don't, unless you were leaving him at 32, I feel like you're probably going to move him up higher than that. Or like, how high are we going? Are we talking like Yuli Gurriel range for CJ Crone?
I mean, if you gave me the choice, I'd want him over Gurriel. Let me see who else that's putting him ahead of.
That would move him ahead of Cronenworth, Bobby Dalbec, Hunter Dozier.
Yeah, I want him more than Christian Walker. I think 22nd seems about right. I need to get him up there behind Jared Walsh and ahead of Christian Walker.
Again, that is CJ Crone, who looks like he is going to wrap up the Rockies' starting first base job. Chris, we'll go back to some of your risers here. Aaron Hicks, you've been adamant about all offseason. Let's pair these two up together, Aaron Hicks and Aaron Civale, the Aarons. I haven't heard, I mean, I know why I like Civale, but I haven't heard your reasoning for why you are buying in on Civale as well. So talk to me about the Aarons.
Same reason for Civale. You know, I think this new arm path that he's introduced, you know, it's all about shortening the arm path. I think he's throwing from a little bit of a higher arm angle, and he's talking about, you know, focusing on his four seamer more. And that is, you know, when you're coming from a high arm slot, you're going to have, you should have better spin efficiency, which is one of these newfangled terms, but it basically just how much of your spin matters in terms of the movement of the pitch. And those are things that matter for getting whiffs. He's got great control. He's got a deep arsenal. He's got this new, it's a splitter, right? That he's introducing.
I think it's, yeah, split change, but yeah, even without that, he had four or five changeups.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a changeup. I think he's throwing his changeup like a splitter now. And those two pitches can often be interchangeable. You know, he was solid in 2019, and in 2020, his ERA was like right around four until his last start of the season. I believe he got bombed in that last start.
Yeah, it was 3.99 before that start, and it boosted up to, I think, 4.82 to wrap up the season. And it came against the Pirates, which was the worst of all. I remember it too. Scott and I were suggesting pitchers to start for the weekend streamers. I was like, yeah, Civale, man, he's going up against the Pirates. If you started him, he might have cost.
It was kind of shaky before that, though, too. It was really a six start stretch where,
for sure. Yep.
It's hard to trust.
And I think, you know, it's fair to wonder whether he has enough stuff. Given like there's always this balance between throwing in the strike zone. Like, it's the command versus control thing. Does he really have great command, or does he throw a lot of strikes? And those aren't the same things. A pitch out of the strike zone can be a very good pitch sometimes. And, you know, there are, you know, I have similar concerns about Plesac. And I view Plesac and Civale fairly similarly. It's just, you know, I diverge from the consensus on both. In
Savali's going 100 picks later almost. So it's much easier to get him than Plesac.
I'm taking Civale out of bus 3.02
because let's go, Scott.
Well, it sounds like he's making such radical changes, his delivery and a new changeup. That's
nobody wants him.
That could be a profile changer, you know, like,
and it's cheap.
I don't even really know what Aaron Civale is anymore with those changes. So I know he has a really good curveball, and I'm probably not going to draft him much because somebody else is going to be more enthusiastic, but I don't feel comfortable like saying don't draft him anymore either.
A few risers for me that I haven't mentioned yet. Gary Sanchez, I moved up to my fifth ranked catcher just ahead of Travis d'Arnaud. I think Sanchez has about as much upside as anyone at the position. He also probably has as much downside as anyone at the position. Bobby Witt, I finally got in the shortstop ranks. He is ranked 28th as of now, just behind Willie Castro. But if they announce he will be the on the opening day roster, then Bobby Witt is probably inside my top 20 shortstops. So I will make that change. And man, I look like such a homer. I didn't even plan this. I have moved Domingo Herman up to SP64. He's been lights out in the spring. 9 shutout innings, 13 strikeouts to 1 walk, and he throws this curveball 36% of the time back in 2019. Domingo Herman had a 20% swinging strike rate on that pitch alone. So he gets a lot of whiffs, and obviously the run support could get a lot of wins there with the New York Yankees as well. Quickly just mention some fallers. Scott, you have Craig Kimbrel, who is dropping in the ranks, but just how far? Because I'm trying to figure out. You probably move him behind Ryan Pressly, right? But then you get to Devin Williams and Nick Anderson and Will Smith. And, I mean, Kimbrel probably has more, he definitely has more job security than those other guys. They don't even have a job. So how far are you dropping Craig Kimbrel?
Oh, maybe Chris won't like this, but I want to drop Kimbrel far enough that I don't get him, basically. he hasn't been a good closer since 2018. And he's having more delivery issues this spring. And so I don't trust him to get it turned around quickly enough. I think he's capable still. I think the stuff is more or less there, but he's just having trouble finding the groove he needs to be in to be effective. And like, you don't get a long leash as a closer ever. So I definitely move him behind Will Smith and Amir Garrett. Probably behind like Rafael Montero, probably down to like 19th in my rankings, which is, you know, kind of in that Greg Holland territory. And then hope I don't face the prospect of having to decide in the draft whether I should take him there.
Damn. All right. A fall from grace for one, Craig Kimbrel. For Chris, a few fallers here. Cody Bellinger, who did hit a towering home run in spring training on Thursday. I have no idea how he got it out. It's like 41-degree launch angle. It looked like a pop-up, and it just kept going. So you like to see that if you drafted Cody Bellinger. Patrick Corbin, I assume that's for velocity reasons. Chris, that makes sense. Kevin Gausman, why is he falling in your ranks?
It sounds like he's not going to start throwing his splitter until the regular season. And he is not a good pitcher if he's not throwing his splitter.
Sure.
To not mince words, I guess. So yeah,
he's not throwing it in spring at all.
It's the same thing that's been happening in years past. He's talked about it in the past where I think the main issue was blisters, and he wants to build up his finger strength to be able to throw the splitter consistently. And this was an issue in his Baltimore days where he would not throw the splitter until like his last start of spring training and then come out of the gate with hype because he closed the previous season strong and get bombed for the first month or two. And I'm just worried that that's what we're going to see again.
Oh, it's a good point that you bring up. Dom Smith is currently dealing with a wrist injury. Were you dropping him because of that injury, Chris, or were you worried about playing time even before that?
Yeah, I think there are more questions about his bat than his initial price indicated, and he just might not be playable defensively out in the outfield. And I don't think they're going to sit Pete Alonso, nor should they. So, yeah, he might not be an everyday player. I like him. I'm starting to wonder, like, should we get back into JD Davis? Is he going to play more than Dom Smith?
He hasn't done anything in the spring either. JD Davis, that is.
Yeah. It's more pessimism about Dom Smith than anything else.
It's so tough too, because I love the player, man. I think Dom Smith, you know, since the start of 2019, 139 games, .299 batting average, 21 home runs, .937 OPS, Statcast was off the charts last year for this guy. 304 expected batting average, 95th percentile. 568 expected slug, 94th percentile. And he can hit lefties. Dom Smith is really, really awesome. And it just sucks that this wrist injury is coming at a terrible time right before the season starts. And
here's
the Mets just, they always find a way to do something like this. It's frustrating.
One thing I would point out, and this is not necessarily an argument that Dom Smith is bad. It's just putting it out there. JD Davis in 2019 had an 895 OPS in 453 plate appearances. In 2019 and 2020, Dom Smith has 396 plate appearances. He has 40 fewer plate appearances basically than JD Davis had in 2019. And we saw JD Davis's 2019 was not necessarily reflective of his performance in 2020. I think he can bounce back. But their numbers are actually shockingly similar across those two sample sizes. And so it's just a warning that despite the fact that we are talking like what Dom Smith has done over the last two seasons, it's 2/3 of an actual season's worth of plate appearances. We're still talking about, like, it's too early to say if we know who Dom Smith is.
It's fair. I mean, he comes with some prospect pedigree too. It took him a couple of years, and I would lean towards he's closer to this player. I mean, is he a 900 plus OPS bat? I mean, that's elite territory. That's elite.
Yeah. So I think more like 860, but that would be really awesome if he played every day. I'm not convinced he will.
Well, we're 55 minutes in. It seems like a good time to talk about news and notes. I mean, there wasn't really much news outside of Carlos Carrasco. Anyway, I mentioned Cody Bellinger. He went 2-for-4 on Thursday with 3 hard hit balls, according to StatCast, including a home run. Scott, I know you wrote about Cody Bellinger's new batting stance recently in your spring notebook. Is there anything you would like to highlight there?
Not really, just that it's another variable that's just, who knows? It's a lot like what he had as a rookie in 2017 when he won Rookie of the Year, but he was a more one-dimensional hitter than, you know, the guy we saw in 2019. So I don't know. I just don't want to go near that and with the second round price tag right now.
Denelson Lamet threw 2 innings in a simulated game on Thursday. It's still unclear whether or not he will be ready for opening day. And we mentioned that when talking about Mackenzie Gore on Thursday's podcast. Scott, you have Lamet up at SP23 in your ranks. Chris has him at SP36. I have him at SP33. This is Lamet. Do you plan to drop him or... Because that still seems pretty high.
That sounds high. I'm surprised I hadn't lowered him yet. No, he shouldn't be that high. He should be outside of my top 30 for sure. I would take him over Carrasco. I would take him over Framber Valdez.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's weird is I have him 36. He's 119 in my overall rankings. And there have been several drafts in the last week or so where he's actually been the top player or top starting pitcher on my board. Which is kind of interesting that there's been, you know, a lot of downward movement for him.
Noah Syndergaard, we mentioned this already, but he's working his way back from Tommy John. He threw a bullpen session on Thursday and apparently was hitting 96 miles per hour, even though he was not throwing at 100%. Steven Strasburg will throw a 4-inning simulated game on Friday. He had no issues in a bullpen session on Wednesday. Chris, if you are drafting this weekend, are you still taking Strasburg around his current ADP, which is 63.4, or would you be willing to pay the $22 price tag that he went for in our salary cap draft this past week? So ADP 63, $22. Would you spend it on Strasburg?
That all sounds a little expensive to me, and I would probably pass, but I would guess you're not going to actually have to spend a 64 overall pick to get him right now. And this is one of those things.
You're taking Carrasco out of that range.
Yeah, but this is one of those things where, like, I saw some comments in the FBT Facebook group that were like, oh, great, here we go again with Strasburg. And, like, I get it. Yes, he has been injured every single season except for, like, 2 in his entire career. He's never had a leg injury. He's never gone on the IL for a leg injury or a lower body injury of any sort. This isn't same old Strasburg. Like, I don't believe that there is like he
and Chris is gone. There's at least a 50% chance that his cat disconnected something, because his cat was all up in his face right now. For those that are watching, if you're listening, give you a little bit of a visual there. So Strasburg, Chris isn't as worried because it's a leg injury, but I think it's still kind of worrisome. It's a calf.
Yeah, I'm not downgrading him because of the injury. It sounds like he's fine. So, you know, if you don't trust Strasburg to stay healthy in general, if you don't trust him to be good in general, that's, you know, I think those are arguments that could be made. But this spring injury sounds like a nothing burger to me.
Chris, are you all right? Did David Bowie disconnect something?
She's really on one. And it's like, just don't step on my keyboard. Like, whatever else you want to do, just like... She closed the browser is what happened. So I'm frustrated. But to go back to what I was saying, to continue the conversation, I don't believe Steven Strasburg has like a calcium deficiency or whatever the muscular and tendrin version of calcium is that makes him...
Did you just make that a word like, up?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't think there's some mechanism in his body that makes like, oh, his elbow gets hurt a lot. And also it makes his calf more likely to get hurt. Like, this was just a weird thing. He's never had a history of this kind of injury. And the fact that he seems fine, I think you should probably be putting him back where he was pre-calf thing.
This isn't really a news item, but it's just an update on Kesson Hira, who throughout the spring has played in 11 games. He is 4-for-26 with 11 strikeouts and just one walk. So a strikeout per game for Kesson Hira. You hate to see it. Let's just wrap up here. A lot of people have been emailing in and asking, please talk about players who are better in OBP category leagues instead of batting average. So let's wrap here. These are the ones I plugged in the projections from ATC, and these were the biggest risers that I can find in dollar value in OBP leagues. Yasmani Grandal at the catcher position. This is first batting average, of course. Anthony Rizzo, Rhys Hoskins, Kevin Biggio, Marcus Semien, Alex Bregman, Chris Bryant, Matt Chapman, Bryce Harper, probably a borderline first round pick in an OBP league, Marcell Ozuna, George Springer, Joey Gallo. Max Kepler, Andrew McCutchen, and Aaron Hicks. I know it's not completely translatable, Scott, but I think players who see a rise in OBP leagues, it also factors into head-to-head points. So I think that's easily translatable.
There's a strong correlation there between players who rise in OBP category leagues and players who rise in points. I'm surprised Max Muncy wasn't among them. He's like the first name that came to mind for
Muncy,
me.
Muncy should have been. I probably miss him.
Did you say Judge?
I did not. He should be on this list as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he's fine in batting average, but he's, you know, can be elite in on-base percentage.
Yeah. And Carlos Santana, you know, he ends up being like a 350-ish OBP because the batting average is so low, but he walks a lot. So it definitely helps his value when it's OBP rather than batting average.
And I think you can make the case for Mike Trout and Juan Soto as the number one overall player in on-base percentage leagues. I think you could probably still lean Acuna just because he did see a pretty significant increase in his walk rate last season that hopefully is sustainable. But, Trout is the odds-on favorite to lead the league in on-base percentage. I think he's done it in the American League like 4 or 5 straight years or something like that.
Mark Canna, if you have any hope for him rebounding power-wise.
Leadoff hitter.
Even last year didn't hit that well. Still almost reached base at like a 390 clip.
Players who
Brandon
lose.
Nimmo.
Yeah, Nimmo for sure. It sounds like he is going to start even against left-handed pitching as well.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, he's been starting against left-handed pitching in
That actually makes me feel worse about Dominic Smith's chances because they got those two. They got Kevin Pillar there, you know?
Yeah.
But he's got to play some.
Oh, man. Somebody free Dom Smith. This is... It's so frustrating to me. Players who lose value in OBP leagues instead of batting average formats. Salvador Perez does not walk much. Jose Abreu, Whit Merrifield, Adalberto Mondesi, Javier Baez, Tim Anderson, Eloy Jimenez. The White Sox don't walk very much. Byron Buxton, Eddie Rosario, and Victor Robles. Scott, anyone else come to mind that would lose value in an OBP format?
Well, pretty much my whole Tout Wars team.
I think you can even look at some higher end guys like DJ LeMahieu probably loses a little value in an OBP league because he goes from, you know, potentially the best in the game in batting average to above average, but not great by any stretch of the imagination in on-base percentage. You know, and he's probably going to be like a 355 on-base percentage guy.
Rafael Devers.
Yeah, he doesn't walk a ton. He's, you know, 6-7%, but definitely could be better. Let's talk about this a little bit more next week, Chris, because you brought up something that kind of got the wheels turning in my head, was especially for someone like LeMahieu in Roto, part of why he's so good in batting average is the volume too, right? So it's the plate appearances, but it's how many hits he gets. It's not just because his batting average is the best in the league. It's the best in the league over the course of almost 700 plate appearances of a full season.
He raises your denominator as well while, you know, increasing your overall batting average. Like a guy who hits 320 in 650 plate appearances is much more valuable than a guy who hits 320 in 400 plate appearances.
Exactly.
Anthony Santan Chicken Tender.
Ooh, now I'm hungry, Scott. We will wrap there. For Scott and Chris, I'm Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball today. Have a great weekend of drafting, and we will be back again tomorrow with our bonus mailbag. Bye-bye.
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.